Hello everyone, welcome to this new episode of CCYSC Arise. In today's podcast, I am with Dr. Clémentine Beauvais.
Hello, my name is Marina Cartier. I am a PhD student at the University of York. My research subject is about children's responses of translated humorous picture books. Today, I am with my supervisor, Clémentine Beauvais. Hello, Clémentine.
Hi.
So you are a children's book author and translator. Your translation from English to French include Toffee et moi by Sarah Crossan, L'Icabog by J.K. Rowling, and Sur le Vif by Elizabeth Acevedo, among many others. You are also a senior lecturer in education at the University of York, and today we are going to talk about translation and childhood studies, one of your many research interests. To delve into the subject, could you tell us more about your research on translation?
So I am interested in the educational uses of translation, essentially. So particularly in the classroom. So I know that might sound very strange because a lot of people, especially in the UK, never really did translation or literary translation, at least in the classroom, whether the language classroom or the English classroom. But I go from the premise, I guess, that the practice of literary translation can have benefits for young children in lots of different areas. I'm particularly interested in literary competence and aesthetic competence.
So you do workshop around translation in the classroom?
Right. So what I do is I tend to research moments educational moments of translation, whereby someone comes in and gives to a group of children, and it can be very young children or indeed teenagers, what is called a literary translation workshop. And what that means is that a person comes in and says to the children, okay, children, we're going to translate a poem, for example. So the very important aspect of this is that they're going from a language that the children don't necessarily know at all. So it might seem very strange to think that you're going to do translation from a language you don't know, but actually the workshop is structured, is scaffolded, so that you can first elucidate the semantic meanings of the words. So you, for example, go from line by line in the poem in the other language, and you try to get children to guess the words, or you tell them some of them, and then they have to find synonyms and think about the words that they might find in their own language. You work through the whole semantic meaning of the text like that, and then you get the children to work on their own or in groups on a literary translation of the poem into their own language. So you end up with something like 10 different poems in English, for example, translated from the French, the Urdu or Russian, by children who never ever had any notion of those languages before they came into the classroom. That's the principle of a translation workshop. What I generally do is I come into classes when this is happening, and I put dictaphones on the tables among the children when they're working in groups on the translations. And I basically listen to their conversations and I ask myself, what are they doing? What kind of skills are they mobilizing when they are doing literary translation? What are they saying to each other? How are they working out translation solutions? How are they performing the texts that they are translating? And all this becomes my data.
Very interesting. And what are your findings about this translation? What kind of skills children use during this translation workshop?
So I had a number of hypotheses before I started the project, and some of them were that doing literary translation was an incredibly useful thing to develop one's literary competence and metalinguistic competence. What we mean by metalinguistic is awareness of language as a thing. So it's not really the same as linguistic competence, which would be, for example, the ability to understand the other language that you're translating from, or in your own language, the ability to use your language correctly. Metalinguistic is more the awareness of the ways in which the mechanics of language work. And for me, as a literary translator myself, I notice that in myself all the time, that looking at your language from another allows you to make tons of discoveries about the weirdnesses and the mechanics of your own language. And I assumed that children would get to similar kinds of intuitions about language by doing literary translation. I also assumed that they would mobilize some literary skills, so aesthetic skills, poetic skills, for example, that they'd get to conclusions about what the best way is, for example, of having a nice line which rhymes or maybe doesn't, or has a number of stylistic devices, that they would enhance that. And to be honest, that is indeed what I found to a large degree in some of my earlier research. It can be seen in various ways. And I find the very interesting thing that I found is that the moments of literary awareness tend to occur in quite an epiphanic way. So they tend to have a bit of an epiphany or a discovery that suddenly a sentence is beautiful. So they go, for example, oh, but that's what it should sound like, or that's what it's like. Oh yes, that's the right word. When they say the right word, they don't mean it in semantic terms. They mean it's the one that rings true, it's the one that rings the best. So they get this kind of aesthetic sense all of a sudden. And as for metalinguistic insight, what I find very interesting is that the children tended to intuit big aspects of translation theory, but of course having never been taught in translation theory before. So this is a kind of prime example of what we call experiential knowledge. So they will, for example, start saying things like, oh, but wait, we lost a pun here, so why don't we like make a joke here? And you know, that called compensation is quite well known as a translation strategy. Or they'll say things like, no, but we need to make it sound like, you know, more like in the original language, because if you say metro and it's not the metro because there's no metro in, you know, in New York, for example. And that's basically, they're talking about foreignization and domestication, which are two key concepts of translation theory. So I find it very, very interesting for those two things. One thing I didn't really expect, but that was everywhere in the data for my early research, was the importance of performance. And performance meaning lots of different things, but the ways in which the children performed to each other and to themselves the texts as they were translating it, putting on voices, repeating and repeating and repeating the same lines, making noises, taking on, you know, putting on dramatic voices. And this is not something that was asked in the workshop. It things that they did on their own, and my theory, my hypothesis at least, is that it helps them link together those linguistic, literary, and metalinguistic insights that they're gaining. It helps them understand where the literariness is coming from and how to link it to purely linguistic aspects of the text they're translating.
This is really, really interesting, and so it is what the children gain from this workshop. But do they have any preparation before the workshop?
Yeah, so I'll just nuance this a bit. I can't claim that's what children gain from the workshops. It's a little bit of a tricky thing. I can definitely claim that's the skills they're mobilizing, you know what I mean? So for example, like you might have kids who say, oh, but you know, in order for the translation to be really good, we need to find like lots of synonyms. So for example, for that one, we've said like a jar, but maybe it's a pot. Like maybe if we say it's a pot, it will rhyme. Or maybe we can say it's a vase or that kind of stuff. Here I can say they're definitely mobilizing, you know, their skills in terms of synonyms, but I can't tell you that they've really gained that skill. It's more like the task in particular requires them to mobilize those skills. So I can't be as bold as to claim that it will, help develop those skills, even though, you know, like, you know, if you give me a few drinks in the pub, I might tell you yes, it does. But I can't be this bold here. And how are they prepared for the workshops? Most of the time they aren't. So normally the person leading the workshop would arrive in the classroom and present to them briefly, maybe in 10, 15, 20 minutes, a number of, you know, key aspects of what literary translation is. They will ask them preparatory questions. They will do activities to get them to think about the operation of translation. something that is not really very academic, even for the older children. It's more fun. It's more like games around translation, for example, or they will get them to realize how little or how much they've read in translation. Or they will try to see, you know, how many languages there are in the classroom. So just like getting them in the mood for the workshop itself. But other than that, there is no need for any pre-existing linguistic interest or interest in literature or in translation. These workshops are, you know, pretty autonomous as they are.
So what would be your tips for someone doing this workshop if they are very autonomous and they are really easy to do and to adapt in a different context?
Yeah, so this type of workshop was developed by a British charity called Translators in Schools that belonged to the Stephen Spender Trust, and they were created in their current format, I guess, by Sarah Ardizzone, who is a very famous translator from the French to English. And the way she sees it, and lots of people who've taken up her workshops, who followed her graduate program, and now there's another company called Shadow Heroes that does them as well. The choice of texts is very important. I personally only do poetic texts, and that's, you know, for reasons that pertain at the same time to my personal interests and to my research. And I tend to find them particularly good at triggering the kind of skills I'm looking for. But the choice of text is quite crucial. You want something that the children will enjoy in its final form and will enjoy working on. Also preferably something that's quite full of sounds that are interesting, maybe rhymes or maybe internal rhymes that will allow them to play with the language in English, if they're translating it into English. You might want texts as well that convey something of cultural significance that will lead to interesting questions, such as, will they want to keep that word in the source language or will they want to change it, that sort of thing. And for the preparation itself, you need to find, nice little games and icebreakers and warm-up activities that get them in the mood of what you're going to try to do. Yes, Translators in Schools has a number of resources to help you do that on their website. So it's a lot of work on the workshop organizer, but in a way it's quite amazing because you get to the end of the 2 hours and the children will have translated a poem from a language they didn't even know 2 hours ago. And
yes,
a huge
this is amazing
for the children.
And so for you, the use of poetry is an interesting support to do it. Could you explain why this choice? So you explained that maybe about the sound.
Well, yeah, it's about a lot of things. So I think the use of poetic language makes it impossible to escape the fact that we're talking about composition and that we're talking about a literary enterprise and not just what might be called literal translation, even though such a thing is very dubious. So when you're faced with a poem, you just cannot escape its artificiality, its composition. And so you're going to have to make a number of decisions in your translation that will have to be extremely strategic and reasoned as to what you decide to do. So let's say you're given a poem by Shakespeare, I'm here taking the perspective of French children because that's what I'm currently doing. So let's say you're a French school child and you're given a sonnet by Shakespeare. Now, Shakespeare is, you know, very classic English poetry. It's written in iambic pentameters, which is the traditional sort of classic rhyme, rhythms or meter of English poetry. You have to translate that into French. You have tons of options in front of you, but each of them has to be a decision. So you're going to have to choose. Do I, just for this question of rhythm and meter, for example, do I just decide not to take that into account and I'm translating it in free verse or in blank verse, for example? Maybe I'll do that. Maybe I'll translate it into the equivalent of iambic pentameter, which doesn't really exist in French, but you can sort of contrive it. Do I translate it in alexandrin, which is the typical classic French line, which is composed of 12 feet with a certain, you know, rhythmicality to it. So it tends to be a stress in the middle or at 3, 3, 3 and 3 or 4, 4 and 4. So what do I do about this? And those decisions really drive home the point that it is about literary composition. And the decisions that you make cannot be arbitrary. They cannot be dictated by a kind of, oh, well, you know, let's just use this word. This is absolutely not to say that translating poetry is more difficult than translating prose. They're completely different things. If you're a literary translator, neither is more difficult than the other. They're each their own project. But for children, and in the context of translation workshops, they cannot escape the literariness of what they're doing if they're translating poetry. And that's why I find them particularly useful to use poems.
Right. And to come back to the workshop, just to know, did you encounter some difficulties?
Yeah, I mean, okay, so one of the reasons why I got very fascinated with translation workshops in the first place is that I'm also a writer and I did lots of creative writing workshops. I still do. And I find that in creative writing workshops, one of the big issues, of course, is that some children are just not motivated and they're not very creative, or so they think, and they don't really like doing what they're doing and they're not very inspired. And actually, it's very loose what you get them to do, even with the most, you know, even the tightest prompts, it's very difficult. Translation workshops, though, have the amazing effect of mobilizing everyone, apart from, you know, very, very rare exceptions. Even the children who normally don't take part, who are not that interested, actually they might reveal themselves to be very good at some of the aspects of it. For example, you need to be very good at synonyms. I mentioned it earlier. And you have some kids who kind of like, they don't really care about anything literary. They don't really care about anything linguistic. But as soon as you say, hey, what are synonyms for, I don't know, a shoe, they will give you a million of them, including, you know, rude words for it or whatever. And they're really, really useful to their classmates. So translation workshops for me have this huge advantage of mobilizing skills that might be different in different people. But of course, it also has the disadvantages of its advantages, so to speak, which is that not all the children, and you can really hear that quite clearly in the conversations, will experience in the same way all the different aspects of a translation workshop. So while in a creative writing workshops, all the children who have completed the task on their own will have written a text and they will have, you know, had to think about all the components. In a translation workshop, you can have children who retreat behind their kind of assigned role, and they don't really think that much about, you know, the literary aspect, or they don't really think that much about register of language, or they don't really think that much about the performance aspect. It's more distributed. That's very interesting from a collaborative work perspective, I think, because it also shows them that they each have a role and a value in the process. But it does question the extent to which you can say that all children mobilize all of those competences at the same time.
Okay. So in your article, An Emergent Sense of the Literary Doing Children's Poetry Translation, there is this beautiful sentence. Translating is never just writing, but always already writing once reading. Could you develop on your definition on what is a translation and translating?
Yes, yeah, so this is something that comes from translation theory, which I think is very interesting, that theorizes translation as a kind of reading. And I know that might sound a little bit counterintuitive. When you think about it, as a translator, I am asked to give a new version of a text, because that's essentially what happens. You're writing it in another language, so it's an entire new version of a text, even if it's never been translated before. And this can depend only on one thing, which is your reading skills, experience, personal history of reading, taste, etc. Of course, your linguistic competence is very important. There's lots of technical skills involved in translation. But first and foremost, it's your reader's perspective that is going to be engaged in it. To be a translator, you need to be an excellent literary critic. You need to be an excellent literary analyst. You need to understand exactly what the text is doing, which requires, you know, technical skills. But the text also comes at a time in your life when it will lodge itself, you know, against other texts and brush against some others and have, you know, frictions with others. You might come at a time when your taste is in a specific direction or your attention oriented in a specific way, which is why when you get to the translation of it, you are going to, so to speak, encode moments of that reading into your translation. It's almost like you're writing down, you know, your own readerly impressions. And it's not just, you know, voluntary. It's of course entirely, for a lot of it, you know, passive and unintentional. It's why, of course, there's lots of translations that bear all translations bear the kind of passive ideology of their time, is because the reading of the translator is completely, you know, floating in this world of ideas and beliefs and fears that sort of exist around them and also transcend them. So every translation is highly linked to the readerly personality of a translator. And this is particularly interesting when you're thinking about children, because of course children, you know, encounter, well, they're not expert readers immediately. They need to be taught literary strategies. They need to be taught how to encounter texts. So when they're doing translation, it's an opportunity to really think about the reading that they've had of the text, their understanding of it, their different approaches to it. And by writing their own reading in the form of a translation, so in this kind of creative literary form, they will have reflected upon their reading in a way that is never normally available to them in the English classroom. So that's another interest of it, I think, in theory.
And going back to children, there is a growing interest about translation in the field of children's literature. And could you explain us the specificities in this field in contrast with adult translation?
Yeah, that's a very complex question, but it's very central. Translation for children has been, well, not as theorized as translation for adults. It's also been historically quite neglected, because there's a kind of convention that, you know, anyone can translate a children's book. So very often, and you'll see that still today, books are translated, as is called, in-house by editors who just be like, ah, you know, we're not going to pay a translator for that. It's just children's story, not realizing that a lot of the time they're actually really hard to translate. And also have lots of poetic devices. So there's been a kind of neglect, both critical and also in terms of the creators of those translations of children's texts. There's also far less scrupulous, the publishers, in changing significantly different aspects of the text in translation, you know, getting rid of entire elements of the plot or characters or toning down lots of things in stylistic terms. And that's because children's publishing is eminently subjected to cultural taboo and expectations. And there's a notion that children are probably not, you know, as expert as adult readers, so they might not understand this or that, or this might be a taboo in their culture. There's also a very strong tendency to what is called domesticize or domesticate the translations, which is to say that instead of mentioning, for example, a word that would be in, I don't know, in Spanish in an American text, you translate the Spanish word into French as well, for example, in order to make it more understandable, perhaps more easily, but also which tends to get rid of the sort of foreign inflections of a text. So children's literature tends to be translated in a way that is supposed to make it sound more fluid or more natural, as if it were written in the target language, so in the language you receive it in. This is not so much an expectation of adult literature. There tends to be much more tolerance for texts that still bear the kind of inflections of their source text. But in recent years, there's been increasing interest academically in actually the demands and the exigencies of translation, and the fact that we shouldn't be teaching children to only appreciate texts that are written, you know, quote unquote, naturally, that actually it's incredibly enriching to have access to a text that sounds like it wasn't written in English originally. And this is particularly true for Anglophone countries. In the rest of the world, translations are very normal for children to read, and that's because a lot of text that the rest of the world reads is English and American texts in translation. But in Britain, there is maybe something like 5% translations on the children's market. And this is, you know, I'm very optimistic in saying that it's probably closer to 2 or 3%. You know, in Scandinavia, it's 80%, right? So we have a rest of the world that is very used to the idea of reading and translation. And then Anglophone countries that consider it a little bit of an exotic thing. So at the same time, it's quite precious and prestigious. But at the same time, it's supposed to be, you know, kind of intellectual literature that is difficult. And there's a lot of research that seeks to challenge that, that seeks to highlight the initiatives that promote translated books into English, that also seeks to say that most children, well, a lot of children in the UK are bilingual because of home languages, and that the fact that they don't really get the opportunity to read translation, for example, from their home languages, but also translation all around the world, sort of negates the incredible benefits aspects, both cultural and cognitive, of that double heritage. So really, research is addressing this today. And I would say, ironically, because of Brexit, in the UK at least, it's almost like we're almost in a better place, like we're better funded than we used to be. There's more interest because there's more interest, there's more impression that there's an emergency going on. So in a way, translation is in a good good era at the moment in Anglophone countries, which wasn't always the case.
And do you think this will influence the research in the field of translation in UK?
So in the field of general translation, I guess you're asking, and
yes, and after that also specifically to children literature.
Yeah, so I think it's definitely the case in children's literature. There's definitely more interest in translation at the moment, with special issues coming out, books. The book that won this year's IRSCL, which is the biggest children's literature society in the world, the book that won the its big biannual prize was a book on translation in children's literature and transmediation by the co-edited by the very famous scholar Jan van Koyle, and these books show that there is an interest in children's literature. In general translation theory, I would be very interested, and that's something that I'm aspiring to do really, to engage with some of those crucial questions from the point of view of what educational research can bring it. So for example, I think the idea that children actually intuit a lot of the debates of translation theory and work through them in a kind of, this kind of intuitive way is interesting because it does, it does bring some, throw some light onto what's happening, for translators, even expert ones, when they're dealing with those questions. And more widely, I think there's a growing recognition of translators of children's literature as a very worthwhile kinds of kinds of translators, and in their community, it's the idea is definitely evolving.
This is really interesting to know, and good for the future.
I hope so.
And for you, what would you like to explore next in your research in this area of translation and in the educational field?
Yeah, so I have a number of projects that are happening at the moment. I have some theoretical ones where I'm interested in, so the consequences of translation, of the practice of translation on translation theory. That's one interest. I've got I'm hoping to co-write a nice article with you, Marina, because
yes,
what you haven't said is that your research is also on translation, and so Marina's research very interestingly offers to look at children, very young children's reactions to translated picture books, and she wants to use two different translation strategies, so domestication and foreignization, for those picture books, and see how the children react to both of those and if they react differentially. But of course, I'm sure you'll confirm, Marina, what we've ended up with is quite an interesting question with consequences on translation theory, which is that it's very hard in practice to know what we mean by a domesticating or a foreignizing translation. So this concept, which is kind of at the core of translation theory, when you try to apply it, is very weirdly fuzzy. So yes. I'd like us to work on that a little bit.
Yes, the definition is really hard to create once you are in the practice of it.
Yeah, exactly. It's quite hard to apply. And then I have another project going on, which is the one I was talking about with Shakespeare sonnets. I'm trying to get very young French children, they're 10, 11, sort of, or 11, 12, to translate, well, with a course of workshops, so six workshops, I'm trying to get them to translate a sonnet by Shakespeare into French and seeing what happens then. And here it's more about working on scaffolding. I'm looking at the kind of scaffolding of these activities that you can do in order to get them to do that in 6 weeks.
So it was my last question. Do you want us to delve a little more in some aspects that we didn't cover? Thank you very much, Clémentine, about all this very interesting insight about the translation in the educational field.
And thank you, Marina. Thanks a lot for those questions. I was very pleased to do this with you. Thank you.
Me too.
Eva Yunus, who is my colleague at York and who suggested that we do this podcast. Thank you to the whole team of people who will work on, you know, this podcast and edit it. And thank you for listening. And have a good browse of all the other podcasts.